Good afternoon. Would you just like to give your name and date of birth, please?
23/9/25.
And your name again?
Christopher Allison.
Thank you very much. And you were in the Royal Air Force during the war, yeah? That's correct.
Well, I joined up in 43.
Okay, thank you. We're here with the children now from the primary school, and each in turn would like to ask a question of this gentleman.
What did it feel like to actually have been, you could think about being killed every day?
Well, you had to live with it. Otherwise, you just fizzle out. You have to live with it, really. But, you know.
It was a difficult time, wasn't it?
Well, it was. I mean, I lost a mate. He was only 19. I thought, oh my God. And then I thought, well, you've got to live with it, or you'll just fall to pieces. Especially looking at that.
That's right. Yeah. So you're. I'll just ask a question then. If you'd like to come in again, then so we've got some background.
Yeah.
So you were posted onto Lancasters then.
Yeah.
And what was your position on the Lancaster?
Flight engineer.
Flight engineer. Okay.
Yeah. Right. I know this is a theory, but
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Would you have a question you'd like to ask?
Yep. How did it feel not knowing if your loved ones were safe at home while you were fighting in a foreign country?
Well, you have to live with that as well, because, see, my dad died when I was 8, so I'm on her own once she had death, and you had to live with it.
Yeah, one thing they found out is in the Blitz, of course, you know, whilst people were fighting over the skies of Germany, people were dying back in England from the same bombing.
My dad died through, more or less in the long run, from World War One wounds.
Right. Yeah. Which a lot of guys did after the war. Just lingered on. Yeah. Okay, would you like to ask a question?
How was it like to work on the Lancaster bomber?
Well, it was all right, as long as you were safe. They were lovely. Nothing wrong with them at all. Especially with that.
How many missions did you fly then total?
Well, I owned a gunner, but you had a front gunner there, and he made one there, and the rear gunner used to catch it really bad. Mm-hmm. Once they attacked you, it would be the rear gunner what got it first. The only advantage he had, he could open the back door, swing it round, and he bailed out, easy as that.
Did you complete 30 missions then?
Oh, not many, no, because the lads had done most of the hard work when I got to Carrington.
Right.
Well, I met Bomber Harris and Donald Pleasance, you remember him, dear?
Yeah.
Well, they got shot down in Germany somewhere, and the French got them back. And when they got back to England, the Alpha Caterpillar, I think it was, on the tie.
That's right.
And he was smashing the idea. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Have you got a question now?
Yep.
Right.
When you were in the war, was it frightening trying to mend the Lancaster bombers?
Well, frightening?
Yeah.
No, it's sad. But not frightening. No, it's sad, very sad. It gets me now sometimes.
Yeah.
We go to the memorial, don't we? Service and.
Yeah, that's one thing I've found. I've done a lot of these recordings.
Yeah.
And one thing I find is that the gentlemen who were like yourself, just survivors, I've talked to some people who were the only survivor of an aircraft. They feel a lot of sadness and it's sometimes guilt that they're the only ones that got through it. And, you know, it seems to be a. Something
well,
that runs through.
You have to live with it. And the first bit I saw the German, I did me 12 weeks training at Skegness, and he flew down there and he shot the blooming clock tower. Have you heard about that?
Yeah.
Well, I was there when he did that.
Right.
And then when we went down south, they flew in one morning when my mate was walking down for training. And the machine gunners, so what we did, we fell on the floor and rolled out of the way. And the sun come again the next day, but we got him next day come, I was waiting for him.
Yeah. We've got two other gentlemen here with us now. If I just get a different aspect, to roughly the same questions, really. How did you feel, you know, obviously?
Yeah. My name is Tony Bradley. I was born in 1930, so I wasn't actually in the armed forces during the war, but I lived in Hull, and Hull got very badly bombed during the war. And to me, I was 10 years of age, and when I got involved, I went into the Army Cadets, and I finished up as an Air Raid Warden's Runner. But the war to me at that time was exciting. Not frightening at that in the beginning, because it didn't involve me. But a little while later on, it did get very frightening. And when I first saw people being pulled out of houses who were dead or injured, which I did see, I began to realise what war was all about. My mother had a very lucky escape, because we were right in the middle of Hull, where we got a terrific pounding. We lost buildings all around us, and you just didn't know from one raid to the next whether you were going to be lucky enough to escape from it, because there was a lot of people killed in Hull. I was pleased that I wasn't in the war a few years later. At the time, I just wanted the war to carry on, because I wanted to get in it, because I had two cousins who were flight engineers. But it's later on in life, when one goes into the services oneself. I was in the Royal Navy, and I went to Tobruk, and my first interview with death as it comes in wartime was at the Knightsbridge Cemetery. And I was with one of my friends looking for his brother. And when I saw all those gravestones, that really brought home to me what war was all about. And it's pointless. It carries on. It doesn't achieve anything, except brings a lot of misery to a lot of people.
Thank you very much, Ian.
It never leaves you, does it, when you see that gravestone?
Yeah, a lot of that. You see, I went through that. During the war, you know, we was in air raid shelters and being, you know, bombed and everything else. But as I say, later on, I went in the Royal Marine Commandos, and I did nearly a year's training when I went in there, from square bashing to naval gunnery to Tarzan courses and all the rest of it, you know, tent lines on Dartmoor, middle of the night, crawling under tracer bullets, and of course, middle of winter, you know, in tents, and all that type of thing. But eventually, I was destined to go to, I was in this here drill shed at Stonehouse Barracks in Plymouth after I finished my training. I was 100% fit, and I got this here called Marine Bateman. One step forward to the right, you're going to Korea. Of course, I was a salt engineer specialist. And eventually, I thought, well, that's it. We're going to go out in civilian clothes and be kitted out by the Americans, seeing, because I was going to be blowing up bridges and one thing and another. And anyhow, they got that many volunteers, thinking it was the Americans. I thought, oh, we have plenty of food, you know, gum, you know, chewing gum and all the rest of it. So they got volunteers, and I finished up going to Malaya. So, I mean, that wasn't much better. And I finished up in the jungle of Malaya for nearly 3 years. And once getting out there, I was taken out to some little outpost called Grick. And we was in these here thatched roof huts. It was rats infested and just earth floor. And I had an orange box, a crate for a bedside cabinet and so on. And we used to go out on patrol, and one particular time, I always remember, I went on a 24-hour patrol and finished up on a 29-day patrol in the same clothes I had stuck, you know, that I had on. And of course, I wasn't getting no airdrops, because the jungle was too thick. And so we was eating tree bark. We had some natives from Borneo, which showed us a few things how to do. We was eating tree bark, raw fish, and we managed to live on that for 29 days. We had to cross the River Pera, fast flowing river. Two of the Marines got washed down the banks. They got drowned. And we finished up going down along elephant tracks. And we had to go to this place called Timanga, some disused tin mines. And I always remember when we got there, we had to identify some bodies, which was in some dried up culverts, so we could smell about 2 miles away. Mm. But one of the worst things that ever happened to me, when we got in some swamps, a sergeant and 9 Marine commandos, and we got ambushed. There was somebody played a bugle, and we were just getting picked off. There was no ground cover, getting picked off. And these Australian Air Force were strafing the area in these mosquito bombers, a wooden structure type of plane, strafing the area, and the bandits fled. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been here. No, they didn't know anything about us. And we finished it with three of us left out of the 10.
So you see what happens back, not just World War Two. This country's been involved in a lot of
conflicts. State of emergency. And what our idea was to resettle the people instead of them trying to starve the bandits out of the jungle, because they was going into these campons and demanding food. So what we had to do is put them into big compounds where they couldn't help the bandits. So that was initially. And of course, another time, I must tell you this, I was in an ambush position. We got some information that these bandits were going to come along this track at a certain time at night. And just before it got dark, we got laid out. Well, the sergeant said, no talking. And we had little toddle ropes to each other, so we weren't allowed to talk. One pull and so on, you know. And when I got laid out with my Bren gun, I realised I was on an ant's nest. And of course, I could feel them wriggling underneath me. They're supposed to have come along with the longest track within the hour, and it was 2.5 hours later they came along, and I see these lanterns coming along. And of course, when we got there, we ambushed them, and we killed 9, and carried them back on bamboo poles.
Can I just bring one thing to you? Is if you think on this, that since the Second World War, there has only been 1 year when we haven't had a serviceman killed in some conflict or other.
Yeah.
That's something to think of.
Yeah. And every time I see these dead bodies come back, I think about your mates, you know, the lads about, 20, 21 years old, you know, and you think, so what's it all for?
It's not only that. It's when you see dead bodies.
Yeah.
I was out in Suez before the conflict actually started. I was ashore doing some work on the electricity station there, and we had a party of Mauritians and a sergeant and a major, and they were ambushed. And if you'd have seen what the natives, I say the natives, see what the natives did to those bodies, you'll never forget it.
No. And that's why I've never slept with my wife for 25 years. We could have had in strangleholds and shouting out, and she's not slept with me for 25 years. Yeah. Do you want my name, by the way?
Please, at the very end, yeah, that'd be good.
Right. I'm John Patrick Bateman. I joined the Marines. I was born in 1928, and I joined the Royal Marines in 1949.
Thanks very much.
And I came out in 58.
Right. So you got a little synopsis there. Have you got anything, any thoughts about that, then, what you've just been hearing?
That's pretty scary.
Are you going to join the Marines, or the Naval, or the RAF? Mm-hmm. Are you going to join?
I'm going to join the...
You're going to join the Air Force?
You were?
Yeah, RAF.
Why?
My dad's in the RAF.
Fair comment. But do what you want to do, not what other people want you to do.
Yeah, I like the RAF, I like planes. It's...
Well, I was in the Army Cadets. I came out of the Army Cadets and went into the Navy. I came out of the Navy and I went to work Marine Services. I was a Marine Superintendent of Diving. And I took up flying. And flying became my life. I was addicted to flying. I had my own glider. I taught gliding, and I took a private pilot's license. And I used to think, if I had only been old enough. Yeah. But no. So do what you want to do.
Same as me. You see, I was in the Scouts, the Cubs, then the Scouts, then the Sea Cadets, and you know. And of course, I used to do a lot. In fact, I used to do fire watching. I was working at a munition factory during the war. And the blokes, the chaps used to say to me, will you do my turn tonight? 3 or 6 a night it was, and I used to do the fire watching.
Yeah.
In a little shed.
Well, that gives us an insight. Sorry, did you say one other thing?
Just one thing. When you're talking among your peers, remember 3 letters. P-P-R. Pride, respect and responsibility.
Yeah.
And they'll take you through life being a good citizen.
Mm. And there will be.
Okay. What you're saying about
thank you very much.
It's nice of you to listen to us anyway.
Yeah, well, this is
pleased to meet you. What's your name?